Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century on Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm Dr. Marcia Mount Shoup.
And I'm Coach John Shoup.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
And we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond the sound bites and highlight reels.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Matt Bush, the news director for Blue Ridge Public Radio. I also help the Shoups produce Going Deep. Super Bowl 53 pits the New England Patriots against the Los Angeles Rams. We'll get to that, but before we do, we have to discuss the conference championship games, which the Patriots and Rams won to get to the Super Bowl. Officiating played an awfully big role in both games, to the point that it may be why the Super Bowl matchup isn't the New Orleans Saints against the Kansas City Chiefs. Wasn't it just in our last episode where we were discussing losing? And we said the worst way to lose was to lose when the official decides the game. So, last Sunday, Championship Sunday in the NFL, two very great championship games both went to overtime for the first time in history. And we're talking about how the officials changed both games on Sunday. Particularly in the NFC Championship game with this pass interference call at the end of the game, which was not called as the Saints were driving to get a winning score. So just your initial thoughts on that the officials right now, as we go into Super Bowl 53 and Super Bowl week, everyone's talking about the officials, the Patriots and Rams. There isn't a whole lot of talk about matchups and players and all that. We're talking about the part-timers and the stripes who kind of decided this matchup.
They sure did decide this matchup. And as that game was ending, I was really thinking to myself, I'm hopeful for a matchup in this Super Bowl of a couple of 40-year-old quarterbacks. And I thought we were going to see Tom Brady battling Drew Brees, and we did not see that simply because of a no call made by an official. And people can say, well, you know, there's 100 other plays in the game, 100, you know, other instances where they could have made up for it. You know, as a coach, I always told players every single play matters. You never know which one is going to make the difference. And the other thing I always told players is you need to be good when it matters. There's a lot of people that are good kind of on in the first quarter or the second quarter, like a golfer who's good on Thursday or Friday. But you need to be good when it matters. And that's coming down the stretch with 2 minutes left in the game. And the officials were not good when it mattered most. And my heart breaks for the New Orleans Saints. I have some friends on that team and on that staff, and my heart breaks for them.
So that's what you were saying internally to yourself. Do you want to say what you were saying externally? That might not be radio friendly.
Well,
there were some four-letter words coming out. That's
there
for sure.
There were some raw feelings.
Yeah, right.
I kept going on and on about it Sunday night.
Yes, he
I was
did.
Surprised how much this affected me. Mm. I've been out of the NFL for a spell now, and I've been out of even, you know, major college sports for a spell now. And I was really surprised, even the next morning, how much this really affected me, because I know how much time and effort Drew Brees put into this. Who's a friend of ours, Sean Payton and Pete Carmichael Jr., their offensive coordinator, who's a friend, put into this. And to see it taken away like that, frankly, I'd be devastated. And I'm not sure, you know, I know I'd ultimately get over it, but son of a gun, if I was Sean Payton or if I was a part of the New Orleans Saints, I'd say, everybody take a little bit of time. We're going to need it on this one. And I'm not sure time heals all wounds, because there's a couple $100,000 that were going to those guys, too, if they made it to the Super Bowl.
Well, it's not just money. I mean,
it's a little bit.
But it's not just, I mean,
it's prestige, too.
You just didn't get that check or whatever. But The other thing is the NFL season is so long. I mean, it is so long. You're just exhausted by that time. And you know how hard it is to put a season together that gets you to that championship game. I mean, it is so hard to get there. And I think it's kind of like you've climbed Mount Everest, you're climbing Mount Everest, you're climbing Mount Everest, and you just about get to the top, and then there's a lightning storm and you have to go back. You don't, and then you don't get to go back up there.
I can remember in 1996, I was with the Carolina Panthers in their second year in existence, and we went to the NFC Championship game against Brett Favre, who ended up going on to win the Super Bowl and was MVP that year. But we went to the championship game in our second year ever in the NFL, and we ended up losing the game. After winning at halftime, I can remember at halftime just thinking to myself, oh, my gosh, I'm half away from the Super Bowl. Come on, I'm almost there. Just about 26 or 27 years old. And after that game, I was sitting in the locker room. I was devastated. I was exhausted. The amount of work that goes into it. I probably slept for a week. But one of the coaches said to me, hey, this is the consolation prize. We get to go to Hawaii and coach in the Pro Bowl. And so we went on a 10-day vacation to Hawaii. And I actually thought to myself Monday, now the NFL doesn't even do that.
No,
the New Orleans Saints won't go get to coach in the Pro Bowl.
That Pro Bowl's not even in Hawaii anymore.
I know, it's not even
in Miami or something.
Yeah, it's in South Florida, and it's the week between. And I just remember thinking to myself that, too. They don't even get to go to Hawaii, because I will tell you, it was a nice consolation prize.
Yeah, that was fun. It's one thing to lose a game, like the other team just beat you, or you made a mistake, or, you know, whatever. It's one thing to lose a game, but to lose it that way after everything that it took to get you there is sort of a kind of iconic eye gouge, you know, from the universe.
And I guess we talked about it in the losing episode, so it's still fresh in all of our brains, I think. But I think what you said was interesting. You haven't been in the NFL for a decade or so, but you were just watching the game and it bothered you the next day. Again, coming down to how you can lose, where your team doesn't play well or the other team just outplays you. What is it about it this way? It comes down to one play and the officials have a determination on how that play goes, blew the call. Why is that so much more galling than any other way that you can lose?
I think a big part of it is because New Orleans did everything right. If a team beats us physically or schematically or something like that, if we get beat, I can live with that. But New Orleans did everything right. And they really should have the opportunity to be in the Super Bowl. I believe that. And that's hard to say, because I know there will always be people saying, yeah, well, there's other plays. They still got the ball after that play. Yeah, but whenever that happens, that's like a punch in the gut. I mean, you got to call the next play, and your mind is just reeling. Sean Payton had to call the next play after that, and I can guarantee that next play, he was still 80% on the last play, wondering how could that guy possibly have missed that interference call. And for the rest of the game, it's easy for people to say, well, you just got to move on. You got to play the next play. Man, you ain't ever put as much into it as those guys did. That was the next play. That was supposed to be it. They did their job, and to have it pulled out from under you, I really can't imagine. So I think that was the toughest part, that New Orleans did everything right.
But isn't that also kind of an iconic narrative for human life? Like, you can do everything right. You can play by the rules. You can do your due diligence. You can, you know, you can put a series of plays together that work. You can score points. You can, you know, all of those things. You've done everything you're supposed to do. And then lightning strikes your house or a tornado comes through or whatever. The powers of the universe that we have no control over take it away. And that, I mean, on some level, I mean, this wasn't the right time for me to say this to you the other night, but I did, that's part of the game. Mm-hmm. It's part of life. And it, but at, to me, it's not, that will never happen. I think they want to put in all these ways that you can prevent these things from ever happening. Let's review this. You're never going to empty the game of this, mm-hmm. this variable.
This human element.
This human element.
Officials are humans.
This variable, mm-hmm. this unfairness, this... I mean, remember we talked about how just the whole template of football just so mirrors our culture.
And as I was hearing you talk, it's as you say, we can do everything right, but then lightning will strike. I mean, I'm sure in your role as a minister, you've had people say to you, I've done everything right.
Yeah.
This bad thing still happened to me in life. Yeah. I still got sick or someone I cared about, something bad happened to them. How can you say there is a God or there is sort of just universe I do everything right?
And it takes a while to get over that. It stings and it can threaten the very foundations of the way you understand things like fairness. And I think it does, like, I guarantee you I've seen them on Facebook. There are a lot of New Orleans Saints fans that are like, I'm sick of y'all. You know, not the Saints, mm-hmm. but officials, the NFL, they want to find somebody to blame. And, you know, the We Were Robbed billboard or whatever.
Right.
And we do. We want somebody to blame. I think the only, you know, more despised job probably in big-time sports, other than the offensive coordinator in football, is officials. Because somebody's always mad at them. You know, mm-hmm. they're always doing something that impacts someone badly, you know,
mm-hmm.
they always are. Even when they're making the right call, somebody's mad about it. So, and that's also kind of a part of human life. Mm-hmm. There's a certain degree in which, and you used to always say this in when you were coaching the NFL, you can do everything right. Everybody's good. Everybody's playing at a high level. Something has to just go right. Chemistry, serendipity, the wind, whatever. Somebody's going to have that thing that tips it over for them, but it's not because they're better, probably, or it's not because they were out-coached, because everybody's at such a high level. And so in this game, it was human error. And there was going to be something, because it was a very close game. There was going to be something.
Yeah. I definitely think to win a championship on a season that is as long as professional football or basketball or baseball, to win a national championship or a world championship, you have to have some luck. Certainly, the ball bounces your way, or even in golf, you get a bounce that you didn't expect and you score well. I get that. Perhaps the thing that frustrates me most about this was there was no judgment in this. This wasn't a judgment call. This was clearly... Mm-hmm.
It was about three penalties in one.
Yeah, this was clearly some
Right, it wasn't just pass
penalties.
Interference. There was also helmet-to-helmet contact.
Yeah.
There was two types of pass interference, i.e. early contact and not looking back for the ball, and there was helmet-to-helmet contact. So there's three things that should have been called. I get that. But one of the things that's frustrating is everybody knew it within, including the official, within 2 seconds after, 3 seconds after, when it's showing up on the board, and there was no recourse.
But see, again,
whereas if the official had thrown the flag mm-hmm. and had been wrong, there would have been recourse. You can wave off a penalty and say, we made a mistake. But you can't then throw a flag after the fact and say, we should have thrown a flag on that. And maybe that's an element of it, that there was no judgment in this. There was no ambiguity in this.
So what I'm hearing here are just so many echoes of our cultural conversation around things like body cams on police and things where people are like, look, you can see that the guy was walking away, that he had mm-hmm. his back turned, whatever. Well, but he felt threatened. So in this situation, what you're saying is everybody knew a mistake had been made, but the rules mm-hmm. were in favor of the wrong.
Instead we can of the
say
right.
Yes, we can say that the same in our culture. And just think about the people most impacted by that, how demoralizing that would be day after day to know that's the kind of world you live in, that if somebody messes up, the rules that are in place for compensation, for justice, for all those things are not in your favor. I mean, to me, it's and I've said this over and over again, both in my written work and different things we've done, that button that gets pushed for mm-hmm. fans when they're so angry, it's that same button, that existential angst of, my life sucks. Nothing is in my favor. Nothing works the way it's supposed to. Even the rules, even the officials, even luck, even the wind, even that damn ball that doesn't bounce the right way. And it's demoralizing. And I think it's part of why cities like Chicago, I love Chicago, but they've had their fair share or more of just losing seasons. I mean, look at the field goal that
well,
popped.
Well, yeah, this season, you know, yeah. they're losing a field goal that hit
that
two.
Hit, yes, when he
uprights
cleared
and
the thing.
A crossbar.
Before they blew the whistle on the first one.
Right.
I said right when he kicked that, oh, he shouldn't have kicked that. I knew right when it went through, he wasn't going to make the other one. But there's a pent-up anger and yes. frustration in cities like that. And so it doesn't take but a little thing for it to boil over. When that happened with that field goal kicker in Chicago, I said to John, I feel so sorry for him right now to be in that city, because they mm-hmm. have no mercy on the person that they feel is the reason something happened. It's that same deep button that just boils over.
And it's interesting because I, at the same time, felt, well, the son of a gun should have made the kick. You know, I've been that offensive coordinator when I've thought to myself, okay, our kicker's got to do his job here now. I helped drive us down into field goal range. Your job is to make this field goal. And I get frustrated when an official, when a kicker, when our left tackle, when our quarterback, sometimes when I don't do the job I'm capable of doing.
How about the general manager should have gotten another kicker when he hit the uprights like six right. times that season? Mm. I mean, really, I'm not saying he's bad, but if that happens once, it's weird. If it happens like two times, three times, you get another kicker. I mean, really. There's no mercy in the NFL.
None.
But to look at these calls Sunday that I think everybody is so galled about, it was the pass interference call in the NFC title game, and then it was a roughing the passer call in the AFC title game. Those are calls really specific to passing, and passing has just become the thing to do in the NFL. You throw 40, 50 times a game, which was unheard of 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So I think some of the frustration at these calls that adds on to the frustration that's there already is that pass interference and roughing the passer. These are calls now that previously the rules for them may have been more defined. Now, because of a lot of other things, they get called certain ways. And much like holding was maybe 20 years ago, everybody held on every play. Could you not call pass interference almost on every play now too? And then the roughing the passer stuff, that really comes into a lot of, one, the importance of the quarterback, but two, also the injuries and particularly concussions that come on quarterbacks because they're standing there stationary with 300-pound men running at them. There has to be a level of protection for there, and I think people get very frustrated that, oh, you know, Jack Lambert, the former Steelers linebacker, said you just put the skirts on the quarterback. Right, but and I knew that. I knew that was going to.
That's a different show.
But there is that level with fans. I think, oh, the quarterback is protected, and why can't you just run and hit the quarterback like that anymore? Not thinking, well, you know, the quarterback standing there stationary, very vulnerable. They get special protection. So I think there's also a level that it was these two particular kinds of calls that have, I think, people really frustrated with. But again, it's also because of the evolution of the game, because we throw 40, 50 times a game now.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot there. But first, with regards to the evolution of the game, I think officiating is in so many ways much harder now than it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, there were certainly a lot of missed calls between the tackles when teams were just running the ball between the tackles. But the TV wasn't as good, and we didn't see him.
But isn't there, to put it this too, because it's tougher as a fan to see the holding penalty inside the tackles, right, as it would be to see a pass interference call where it's just two guys 20 yards downfield.
Right. It's tough to see a penalty sometimes when it's 5-on-5. But when it's 1-on-1, it becomes much more vivid, at least in the TV screen. But the other thing with the evolution of the game is the passing and everything. It's such a faster game, and it's going so fast, and especially even when teams like the Rams go no huddle quite a bit, and so do the Saints some. It's really hard for officials to know who their assignments are sometimes. There's five eligible receivers on every play, and officials count eligible receivers the same way defenders do. I've got number one, I've got number two, I've got number three, I've got number two weak, and I've got number one weak. And when number one becomes number three and number two becomes number one in milliseconds, they got to switch off the same way sometimes defenders do. And it's really hard. In this case, in New Orleans, I think all the officials actually were in the right spot, had their eyes on the right thing, and just for whatever reason missed it. What I've read is the official that did not throw the call thought that the ball was tipped because the defender got there so early, he just figured the ball must have been tipped. What a shame, because it was not. So that's one thing, how fast it's going. With regards to the protection of the quarterback, yes, the quarterback is vulnerable, sitting in a position and can get blindsided. But the real reason the quarterback is protected so much is the quarterback's the highest paid player in the organization.
And the most valuable to the team, really.
And the most valuable to the team. If you're giving this guy $20 million to play quarterback for you, Al Davis, the owner of the Oakland Raiders, used to tell me the absolute worst thing that can happen to a player on our roster is they're unavailable. So you better make sure that you practice accordingly, that they're ready to play on Sunday, and you better make sure that the rules protect them accordingly and that their bodies, their suit of armors are developed in the offseason, because the first goal for a starting quarterback in the NFL is to start 16 games. That's the first goal.
The quarterback is by far the most important person on the team. When that sort of
in the organization.
In the organization. That can breed resentment knowing, oh, that's the golden boy. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes down to a bit of something we also talked about in that losing episode of when resentment builds and all that sort of thing, that can lead to some very ugly comments, like things that were sexist that mm-hmm. I'd mentioned earlier, things mm-hmm. that can be racist, things can be a lot of stuff. And when you have that sort of resentment around, yes, Tom Brady is the most important player in that organization by far, that can build some resentment, not just by fans, by anybody, right? And that right. leads to some really ugly things.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's better now than it used to be. But even when John was coaching in the NFL, there were very few African-American quarterbacks. So it was also raced. The quarterback was usually white. Mm-hmm. And so there is also kind of echoes of that sort of racialization of who gets protection, who gets special dispensation, who gets, you know, taken care of, who gets stuff built around them. Well, the white guy does. And definitely, I think also when you look at positions that are more prone to serious and chronic head injuries and brain injuries, it's not necessarily the quarterback. I mean, those offensive linemen that are just hitting, banging against each other's heads every play, you know, there's just some really tragic stories of some of those big guys. And we rarely do we think about, like, what protections do they have? How are the rules made to make sure they, you know, why do we still have a line of scrimmage like that mm-hmm. if we know the impact it has on their brains? So, yes, it does. There's a culture around the quarterback being, you know, such the favored one that really does adversely impact other players with long-term consequences. So I can kind of understand why. And that's why it takes a special person, and John has coached several, a special person to be a quarterback on a really, you know, winning team, because those quarterbacks, they take care of those guys. They take care of them. They're close. They, you know, they give them gifts. They go out to dinner. They're like brothers. And those, because they know that they all are really dependent on each other for this to work.
Well, I've always thought of the quarterback of an NFL football team as the CEO of the organization. And if you don't think that's the case, think about this for a second. There was a year where Peyton Manning was the quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts. They won a Super Bowl. Bill Polian was the general manager and was the general manager of the year. And Jim Caldwell was the head coach, and he was the NFL coach of the year. And Peyton was the MVP. The next year, Peyton Manning got injured. Sat out the entire year. Bill Polian got fired. Jim Caldwell got fired. Peyton Manning ended up getting cut. If you can believe it, they actually cut him. And then the following year, the Colts draft Andrew Luck, who's a great player with the first pick of the draft. Now listen to this. They hire a new football coach in Chuck Pagano. And Chuck Pagano does not even coach that season because he has cancer.
Diagnosis.
He has cancer. And so an interim coach, Bruce Arians, coaches that entire season. And under Andrew Luck, who goes to the Pro Bowl, is Rookie of the Year, is all of a sudden NFL Coach of the Year. The quarterback is the most important person in an organization. And that's why he's paid accordingly. And think of this. There's only one football coach in the NFL Hall of Fame who has not coached a Hall of Fame quarterback. Every other coach that is in the NFL Hall of Fame is there because they coached Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And this guy, actually, in a few years, he's already in the Hall. One of his quarterbacks might get in too. So I'll bet in a few years, not one coach in the Hall of Fame is there without having coached the Hall of Fame quarterback.
And we'll wrap here, Mr. Peabody. Give us the answer to that trivia question.
Bill Parcells. Phil Simms is not in the Hall of Fame. Drew Bledsoe's not in the Hall of Fame. Tony Romo might be in a few years.
Never went to the Super Bowl. He gets to go this year, though.
He gets to go this year.
You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter as well, @ShoopsGoingDeep.